More of Lake Effect Now. I'm Mitch Teich. It's after 10 o'clock, and if you are like a good part of the Lake Effect staff, you have already graduated from your first cup of coffee today to a second, maybe even a second pot. But if you're like most of us, most of your thought goes into the drinking of coffee, and maybe as far back as the brewing, but probably not much further. But of course, there is much work that goes into picking beans, shipping them, and then roasting them well before the brewing part comes in. And for some roasters, this caffeinated bean grown continents away is scrutinized to a science. Temperatures, humidities, and soil nutrients are just a few variables that play into how a morning brew tastes. They're on the mind of Stone Creek Coffee's Christian Ott. He's the director of coffee at Stone Creek. He took Lake Effect's Nathan Royster on a tour of the company's 4th Street roasting plant and answered some questions about the sometimes confusing coffee world.
Green coffee has a shelf life of about a year. It's relatively stable. If you're keeping it in a really good environment, that's why we like this to be temperature and humidity controlled. It's very porous and it's very reactive to the environment. So if it's too dry down here, that green coffee is going to dry out. It's going to affect the way it roasts. It's not going to be the same. If it's too humid, the moisture is going to go in the green coffee. Again, it's going to affect the way it roasts. Also, if there's something else going on there, like if there's some kind of fumes leaking in, coffee's really porous. Like when you go smell perfume at a place, kind of your neutralizing element that you use is roasted coffee. Like you're smelling perfume, so you smell the coffee to clear your palate. Very porous. It takes in any like aromas that are around. Same is true with the green. So sometimes at origin you actually see problems where coffee is stored near like diesel trucks and you go and you actually taste the coffee and eventually it tastes like diesel, and that's the reason because of it. Most of this is good for about a year, like I said. So this is our production area. This is where we do all of our production, roasting, and grinding and bagging of coffee. We do everything by hand. We have a really small staff back here. It's only 4 to 5 people, so a very, very small operation. And any given week, we're roasting somewhere between 4,000 and 6,000 pounds of coffee, so no small amount of coffee for that. So roasting 4 or 5 days a week, getting going to the holidays now, we'll probably be roasting a bit more, a bit longer days. No two coffees are going to be exactly the same. You can't get it, like, different parts of the farm are going to be very different, so if I wanted the exact same coffee next year, it's not going to happen. It changes. It's just like wine varieties year after year. It's never exactly the same. Every single roaster is different. Every single environment is different. Every single coffee batch is going to be different. So there's no real way you can steal recipes. In terms of roasting and green sourcing, I won't say we take more care than our competitors, but I will say that we take more care than our competitors. I'm really picky about the green coffee that we buy, and I'm getting pickier every single day, spending lots and lots of time in there. I'll show you a little bit of what green sorting looks like. If there's even one major defect, I'm not going to buy it. And what that does is guarantees that the coffee coming out of the roaster is very, very consistent. During our roast process, our goal is to kind of just guide the coffee along and let it reveal itself. We're not going to try to force it anyway. We don't like doing too many dark roasts or too many light roasts. Every coffee will kind of dictate its natural place of being good. Some coffees have a couple different places, but maybe that kind of variety allows us to do really cool things with the coffee. A lot of bags of coffee in and around. We have a couple of people that are getting ready for competition, so T-Bun's in here. He's actually working on some competition espresso. Both of my barista competitors have been roasting their own coffee, so they're roasting on this little roaster right here. This roasts about 2 pounds at a time versus the one out there, which is about 100 pounds. First thing you do is you take a look at the green coffee, and it's kind of like a Where's Waldo. You need to figure out what's going on. So this is a sample I got from an importer. I want to tell you who it is. See if you can find something that's different.
My name is Christian Ott. I am the Director of Coffee and Coffee Education at Stone Creek Coffee in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
So how much coffee did you say was roasted in a single day or even a year here at the Stone Creek factory?
So we roast somewhere between 4,000 and 6,000 pounds a week. So if you multiply that by about 52, and I don't have the number off the top of my head, but it's a lot of coffee.
What is the source of power energy for the roasting?
It's a natural gas roaster. The Diederich runs on natural gas, and it kind of runs similar to, it's a little bit different than your normal roasters. A lot of people use Probat, which is flame on a turning drum. The Diederich roaster kind of runs like a pizza stone, so there are ceramic tiles that the heat absorbs and then transfers from the tiles to the roaster. So the idea is you have a little bit more of a gentle heat to the roaster, so a little bit more even, consistent roast.
And when it comes to roasting, how much of it is subjective and how much of it is actual soft science?
I think it's all science, to be honest. I think so much of coffee, from roasting to brewing, is about looking at the chemistry of what's going on. And a lot of that is noticeable via taste. And if you have a trained palate, it's really easy to pick up those nuances. But what you're doing when you're roasting is you're developing the natural materials that are there. So you're developing different acids, developing different sugars. And at some point, if you're doing a dark roast, you're choosing to carbonize some of the material that's there. And every coffee is going to be a little bit different. You can't just subjectively say, I want everything to be a dark roast, because you're not going to be true to the coffee that you have. You have to allow it to express itself. And if it wants to be a light roast and have a lot of acidity to it, when I'm cupping it initially, it'll kind of scream out to me and say, oh, be a light roast, and I'll find a profile that'll guide it there. And you need to be very careful when you're applying heat to the roaster and when you're applying air, because it'll all manipulate and change the way that the coffee tastes. I can do two roasts that are 30 seconds apart, and I might have lost 50% of the acidity that I was really looking for. So it could go from being this really awesome, like, apple crisp fruitness to just being kind of a bland, nutty flavor in a matter of 30 seconds.
And you use the term light and dark roasts, but we become kind of confused about what those different terms mean. And there's even a further spectrum of, like, from what, cinnamon to Spanish roast. I mean, can you just give us a short explanation?
The reason for all the confusion is kind of coffee's been coming from all over the place and lots of different traditions. Like, you see a lot of coffee from Europe traditionally being a very dark roast, like an Italian roast. Turkish coffee tends to be dark roasted. French coffee tends to be dark roasted. And I think it ended up that way because of the quality of coffee that was going in there. So if you have low quality coffee, if you roast it a bit darker, you tend to not notice as much of the defect or things going on with the coffee. So it becomes more uniform the darker you take it. That being said, that scale was kind of used in the Americas. We had terms like cinnamon. I don't know if you've heard of city, full city, Vienna, Italian. They end up being such a large spectrum when you're looking at the actual roast temperatures that it's not really clear. I personally don't like using the terms light, medium, and dark, because sometimes it doesn't allow a customer to try something because they think it's out of their category or things to like. And so what we do scientifically here that's a little bit different is we do everything via what's known as Eichtron numbers. So when we roast the coffee, we look at both the outside, so the whole bean coffee, and we get an objective score. So it takes light and refracts it off the beans and gives us a score. The higher the number, the more light bounces back. So say I have a light roast, it might be 58 on the outside, 65 on the inside. So I go in and grind up the coffee, and I can check consistency there. And that gives me a number scale with which I can talk about. But again, every single coffee is going to taste a little bit different at a roast level. So roast levels overall, it's hard to talk about coffee when you're referring to just roast level.
So we understand, like, coffee is different roast levels, but does espresso have a certain roast profile or level that is very much espresso?
Truth is, espresso is simply the beverage you pull on an espresso machine. So it's 50 to 70 milliliters pulled over 20, 30 seconds, extracted with 9 bars of pressure with water, 195 to 205 degrees Fahrenheit, about 18 grams of coffee. And you can use any coffee that you want to. It's really the coffee beans that dictate the espresso. And I feel sometimes people dark roast espresso too much, and you lose a lot of that natural flavor, that natural sweetness that really is pulled out of the espresso. Because what really is unique about espresso is the concentration in the beverage. Normal brewed coffee is somewhere between, it's about 99% solution of water, 1% coffee. Espresso is about 5% solution. So you pull about 5% into that mixture there. And so you get a heavier, more viscous beverage. And you're using the pressure from the espresso machine to make that kind of fuller tasting beverage. So you can really highlight the really awesome nuances of the espresso machine.
You're talking about all the different places you get coffee from. You have from Costa Rica and Brazil and such. Do you have them come to you to try it, or do you seek them out or have a specific farm maybe that you use?
It's really about building relationships. We built relationships with 6 or 7 different farms in Costa Rica this year, and we went there. Usually it's via someone who can take us and show us around to meet different farms. So what's really cool about Costa Rica is that there are all these what are called micro mills. Typically, you farm the coffee, you wet process the coffee, or you're using natural process on the coffee, and then you take it to a larger mill to dry mill and process the coffee. And a lot of times, the wet process actually happens at a larger mill as well. In Costa Rica, all these farms get their individual mills so they can keep their lots very, very unique. And so we're working with partners who we have a lot from Cerro Verde. Cerro Verde is a brand new mill this year and also a brand new farm, so we're getting the first pickings from that farm. Their entire crop was 20 bags of coffee, and we bought all 20 bags of that. So it's a really cool direct relationship there. High-quality coffee usually costs a little bit more money, but you're helping the farmer sustain and develop for the next year. And it's a long-term relationship that benefits from us. And we're continuing to look for more and more relationships like that. Like, I'll be going to Colombia in a couple weeks, and then across Central America in January, so El Salvador, Guatemala, again to Costa Rica, and East Africa sometime in the spring, to find more of those direct relationships. The more that we can find and know the people, and also the more that we can see the farm, the better we feel about the coffee.
There are a lot of misunderstandings with espresso, especially because you have cappuccinos, and you can get cappuccinos at a coffee shop like this or in a gas station where it is in a big gulp container. What is the proper kind of cappuccino?
A traditional cappuccino is a 6-ounce beverage with 1 shot of espresso, steamed milk, so that when the milk separates, it's half foam, half milk. We're more than happy to make any beverage for a customer, and those 20 ounce, we do sell them. But traditionally, it's in that small little container, and it's equal portions of espresso and milk, and very, very, we like to say it's a synergy of flavors. It's harmonious. It's really, really delicious. I recommend trying a 6-ounce if you haven't.
Christian Ott, thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Christian Ott is the director of coffee at Milwaukee-based Stone Creek Coffee. He spoke with Lake Effect's Nathan Royster from the company's 4th Street coffee roasting facility. Reconsidering the contribution of so-called pragmatic philosophers. We'll do just that with a UWM philosophy professor when we return, just as soon as it's pragmatic. This is Lake Effect from WUWM.